Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver is read by Ian McKellen and brought to you by audible.co.uk. Listen out for next week's instalment.
Chapter 17. Torak woke at dawn feeling stiff and sore, but he could move all four limbs and nothing felt broken, so he decided he was better. Wren was kneeling at the mouth of the cave, trying to feed Wolf a handful of crowberries. She was frowning with concentration as she held out her hand. Wolf edged cautiously forwards, then jerked back again. At last he decided he could trust her and snuffled up the berries. Wren laughed as his whiskers tickled her palm. She caught Torak looking and stopped laughing, embarrassed to be seen making friends with the cub. "How do you feel?" she asked. "Better. You don't look it. You'll need to rest for at least a day." She got to her feet. "I'm going hunting. We should keep the dried food for when we need it." Torak sat up painfully. "I'm coming too." "No, you're not. You should rest. But my clothes are dry and I need to move around." He didn't tell her the real reason, which was that he hated caves. He and Far used to shelter in them sometimes, but Torak always ended up outside. It felt all wrong to be sleeping between solid walls, cut off from the wind and the forest. It felt like being swallowed. Wren sighed. "Promise that as soon as we make a kill, you'll come back here and rest," Torak promised. Getting dressed hurt more than he'd expected, and by the time he'd finished, his eyes were watering. To his relief, Wren didn't notice, as she was preparing for the hunt. She combed her hair with an ashwood comb carved like a raven's claw, then tied it back in a horsetail, and stuck in an owl feather for hunting luck. Next, she speared ash on her skin to mask her scent, and oiled her bow with a couple of crushed hazelnuts, chanting, "May the clan guardian fly with me and make the hunt successful." Torak was surprised. "We prepare for hunting in the same way, except we say, 'May the clan guardian run with me,' and we don't oil our bows every time." "That's just something I do," said Wren. Lovingly, she held it up so that the oiled wood gleamed. "Finn Kedin made it for me when I was 7, just after Far was killed. It's yew wood, seasoned for 4 summers. Sapwood on its back for stretch, heartwood on its belly for strength. He made the quiver, too. Wove the wicker himself, and let me choose the decoration. A zigzag band of red and white willow." She paused, and her face became shadowed as she remembered. "I never knew my mother. Far was everything. When he was killed, I was crying so hard. Then Finn Kedin came, and I hit him with my fists. He didn't move, just stood there like an oak tree, letting me hit him. Then he said, 'He was my brother. I would look after you.' And I knew that he would." She scowled, sucking in her lips. Torak knew that she was missing her uncle and probably worrying about him too, as he tracked her through the bear-haunted forest. To give her time, he made his own preparations and gathered his weapons. Then he said, "Come on, let's go hunting." She nodded once, then shouldered her quiver. It was a bright, cold morning, and the forest had never looked so beautiful. Scarlet rowan trees and golden birch blazed like flame against the dark green spruce. Blueberry bushes glittered with thousands of tiny frost-spangled spiders' webs. Frozen moss crunched underfoot. A pair of inquisitive magpies followed them from tree to tree, bickering. The bear must be far away. Unfortunately, Torak didn't get long to enjoy it. Around mid-morning, Wolf startled a clutch of willow grouse who shot skywards with indignant gobbles. The birds flew fast and into the sun, so Torak didn't even bother taking aim, knowing he'd never hit one. To his astonishment, Wren knocked an arrow and let fly, and a willow grouse thudded into the moss. Torak's jaw dropped. "How did you manage that?" Wren reddened. "Well, I practice a lot, but I'd never seen shooting that good. Are you the best in your clan?" She looked uncomfortable. "Is there anyone better?" "Not really." Still embarrassed, she waded off through the blueberry bushes to retrieve the grouse. "Here." She flashed him her sharp-toothed grin. "Remember your promise? Now you've got to go back and rest." Torak took the grouse. If he'd known she was such a good shot, he'd never have promised. When Wren returned to the cave, they had a feast. From the hooting of a young owl, they knew that the bear was far away, and Wren judged that they'd come far enough east to have escaped the ravens. Besides, they needed hot food. Wren wrapped two small pieces of grass in dock leaves and left them for the clan guardians, while Torak moved the fire to the mouth of the cave as he was determined not to spend another night inside. Half-filling Wren's cooking skin with water, he hung it by the fire. Then, using a split branch, he dropped in red-hot stones to heat it up and added the plucked and jointed willow grass. Soon he was stirring a fragrant stew flavoured with crow garlic and big fleshy wood mushrooms. They ate most of the meat, leaving a little for day meal, and sopped up the juices with hawkbit roots baked in the embers. After that came a wonderful mash that Wren made of late lingonberries and hazelnuts, and finally some beechnuts, which they burst by the fire and peeled to get at the small, rich nuts inside. By the time he'd finished, Torek felt as if he need never eat again. He settled down by the fire to mend the rip in his leggings where the hidden people had grabbed him. Wren sat some way off trimming the flights on her arrows, and Wolf lay between them, licking his paws clean, having swiftly dispatched the joint of grouse that Torek had saved for him. For a while there was a companionable silence, and Torek felt contented, even hopeful. After all, he'd found the first piece of the Nanuak, that must count for something. Suddenly, Wolf leapt to his feet and raced out of the firelight. Moments later he returned, circling the fire and making agitated little grunt whines.
"What is it?" whispered Wren.
Torak was on his feet, watching Wolf. He shook his head.
"I can't make it out. Kill, smell, old kill, move, something like that."
They stared into the darkness.
"We shouldn't have lit a fire," said Wren.
"Too late now," said Torak. Wolf stopped the grunt whines and raised his muzzle, gazing skywards. Torak looked up, and the remains of his good humour vanished. To the east, above the distant blackness of the high mountains, the red eye of the great auroch glared down at them. It was impossible to miss. A vicious crimson, throbbing with malice. Torak couldn't take his eyes from it. He could feel its power, sending strength to the bear, sapping his own will of hope and resolve. "What chance do we have against the bear?" he said. "I mean, really, what chance do we have?"
"I don't know," said Wren.
"How are we going to find the other two pieces of the Nanuak? Oldest of all, the stone bite. Coldest of all, the darkest light. What does that even mean?" Wren did not reply. At last he dragged his gaze from the sky and sat down by the fire. The red eye seemed to glare at him even from the embers. Behind him, Wren stirred.
"Look, Torak! It's the first tree!"
He raised his head. The eye had been blotted out. Instead, a silent, ever-changing green glow filled the sky. Now a vast swathe of light twisted in a voiceless wind. Then the swathe vanished, and shimmering pale green waves rippled across the stars. The first tree stretched forever, shining its miraculous fire upon the forest. As Torek gazed at it, a spark of hope rekindled. He'd always loved watching the first tree on frosty nights, while Far told the story of the beginning. The first tree meant good luck in hunting. Maybe it would bring luck to him, too.
"I think it's a good sign," said Wren, as if she'd heard his thoughts. "I've been wondering, was it really luck that you found the Nanuak? I mean, why did you fall into the very part of the river where it lay? I don't think that was by chance. I think you were meant to find it."
He threw her a questioning glance. "Maybe," she said slowly, "the Nanuak was put in your way, but then it was up to you to decide what to do about it. When you saw it at the bottom of the river, you could have decided it was too dangerous to try for, but you didn't. You risked your life to get it. Maybe that was part of the test." It was a good thought, and it made Torak feel a little better.
He fell asleep watching the silent green boughs of the first tree, while Wolf sped out of the cave on some mysterious errand of his own. Wolf left the den and loped up to the ridge above the valley to catch the smell on the wind, a powerful smell of rotten prey like a very old kill, except that it moved. As he ran, Wolf felt with joy how his pads were toughening, his limbs getting stronger with every dark that passed. He loved to run, and he wished that tall tailors did too, but at times his pack brother could be terribly slow. As Wolf neared the ridge, he heard the roar of the thundering wet and the sound of a hare feeding in the next valley. Overhead, he saw the bright white eye with her many little cubs. It was all as it should be, except for that smell. At the top of the ridge, he lifted his muzzle to catch the scent-laden wind, and again he caught it quite close, and coming closer. Racing back into the valley, he soon found it, the strange shuffling thing that smelt so rotten. He got near enough to observe it clearly in the dark, although he was careful not to let it know that he was near. To his surprise, he found that it was not an old kill after all. It had breath and claws, and it moved in an odd shambling walk, growling to itself while the spit trailed from its muzzle. What puzzled Wolf most was that he couldn't catch what it was feeling. Its mind seemed broken, scattered like old bones. Wolf had never sensed such a thing before. He watched it make its way up the slope towards the den where the tailless were sleeping. It prowled closer. Just as Wolf was about to attack, it shook itself and shambled away. But through the tangle of its broken thoughts, Wolf sensed that it would be back.
Chapter 18. The fog stole up on them like a thief in the night. When Torak crawled stiffly from his sleeping sack, the valley below had disappeared. The breath of the world spirit had swallowed it whole. He yawned. Wolf had woken him often in the night, racing about and uttering urgent half-barks. Kill smell. Watch. It didn't make sense. Every time Torak went to look, there was nothing but a stink of carrion and an uneasy feeling of being watched. "Maybe he just hates fog," said Wren grumpily as she rolled up her sleeping sack. "I know I do. In fog, nothing's what it seems." "I don't think it's that," said Torak, watching Wolf snuffing the air. "Well, what is it, then?" "I don't know. It's as if something's out there. Not the bear, not the ravens. Something else." "What do you mean?" "I told you, I don't know, but we should be on our guard." Thoughtfully, he put more wood on the fire to heat up the rest of the stew for day meal. With an anxious frown, Wren counted their arrows. 14 between us, not nearly enough. "Do you know how to nap, Flint?" Torak shook his head. "My hands aren't strong enough. Far was going to teach me next summer." "What about you?"
"The same. We'll have to be careful. There's no telling how far it is to the mountain, and we'll need more meat. Maybe we'll catch something today."
"In this fog?"
She was right. The fog was so thick that they couldn't see Wolf 5 paces ahead. It was the kind that the clans called the smoke frost, an icy breath that descends from the high mountains at the start of winter, blackening berries and sending small creatures scuttling for their burrows. Wolf led them along an auroch trail that wound north up the side of the valley, a chilly climb through frost-brittle bracken. The fog muffled sounds and made distances hard to judge. Trees loomed with alarming suddenness. Once they shot a reindeer, only to find that they'd hit a log. That meant a frustrating struggle to dig out the arrowheads, which they couldn't afford to lose. Twice Torak thought he saw a figure in the undergrowth, but when he ran to look, he found nothing. It took all morning to climb the ridge, and all afternoon to scramble down into the next valley, where a silent pine forest guarded a slumbering river. "Do you realize," said Wren, as they huddled in a hasty shelter after a cheerless night meal, "that we haven't seen a single reindeer? They should be everywhere by now."
"I've been thinking that too," said Torak.
Like Wren, he knew that the snow on the fells should be driving the herds into the forest to grow fat on moss and mushrooms. Sometimes they ate so many mushrooms that they even tasted of them. "What will the clans do if the reindeer don't come?" said Wren. Torak didn't answer.
Reindeer meant survival, meat, bedding and clothes. He wondered what he was going to do for winter clothes. Ren had had the foresight to put hers on before she left the Raven camp, but she hadn't been able to steal any for him, so all he had was his summer buckskin, not nearly as warm as the furry parka and leggings which he and Far made every autumn. Even if they did find prey, there'd be no time to make clothes. Beyond the fog, the red eye of the great Auroch was climbing ever higher. Torak shut his eyes to push the thought away and eventually fell into an uneasy sleep, but whenever he awoke in the night, he caught that strange carrion stink. Next morning dawned colder and foggier than ever, and even Wolf seemed dejected as he led them upstream. They reached a fallen oak bridging the river and crawled over it on their hands and knees. Soon afterwards the trail forked. To the left it wound into a valley of misty beech trees. To the right it disappeared up a dank gully, its steep sides an uninviting jumble of moss-covered boulders. To their dismay, Wolf took the right-hand trail. "That can't be right," cried Wren. "The mountain's in the north. Why is he forever going east?" Torak shook his head. "It feels wrong to me, too, but he seems sure." Wren snorted. She was clearly having doubts again. Looking at Wolf, waiting patiently, Torak felt a twinge of guilt. The cub wasn't even 4 moons old. At this age, he should be playing by his den, not traipsing over hills. "I think," he said, "we ought to trust him." "Hmm," murmured Wren. Hoisting their packs higher on their aching shoulders, they entered the gully. They hadn't gone 10 paces before they knew that it didn't want them. Towering spruce trees warned them back, with arms spread wide. A boulder crashed in front of them. Another struck the path just behind Wren. The stink of carrion grew stronger. But if it came from a kill site, it was a strange one, for they heard no ravens. The fog closed in until they could barely see 2 paces ahead. All they could hear was the drip, drip of mist on the bracken and the gurgle of a stream rushing between fern-choked banks. Torak began to see bear shapes in the fog. He watched Wolf for the least sign of alarm, but the cub plodded along, unafraid. At midday, or what felt like midday, they halted for a rest. Wolf slumped down, panting, and Wren shrugged off her pack. Her face was pinched, her hair soaking. "I saw some reeds back there. I'm going to plait myself a hood." Hanging their quivers and bows on a branch, she moved off through the ferns. Wolf heaved himself up and padded after her. Torak squatted at the edge of the stream to refill the water skins. It wasn't long before he heard Wren coming back. "That was quick," he said.
"Out!" bellowed a voice behind him. "Out of the Walker's Valley, or the Walker slits throats!"
Torak spun round and found himself staring up at an unbelievably filthy man, towering over him with a knife. In an instant he took in a ruined face as rough as tree bark. Waist-length hair matted with filth, a rancid cape of slimy yellow reeds, and at last the carrion stink was explained, for around the man's neck hung a pigeon's softly rotting carcass. In fact, everything about him seemed to be rotting, from his empty, festering eye-socket to his toothless black gums and his shattered nose, from which hung a loop of greenish-yellow slime.
"Out!" he bellowed, waving a green slate knife. "Narik and the Walker, say out!"
Quickly Torak put both fists over his heart in the sign of friendship. "Please, we come as friends. We mean you no harm."
"But they already did harm," roared the man. "They bring it with them to the beautiful valley. All night the Walker watches. All night he waits to see if they will bring harm to his valley."
"What harm?" Torak said desperately. "We didn't mean it." There was a stirring in the bracken, and Wolf threw himself at Torak. Torak clutched the cub close and felt the small heart hammering. The man didn't notice. He'd heard Wren creeping up behind him.
"Sneaking up, is she?" he snarled,
lurching round and waving his knife in her face. Wren dodged backwards, but that only made him angrier. "Guess she wants them in the water!" he cried, snatching their bows and quivers from the branch and holding them out over the stream. "Does she want to see them swim? The pretty arrows and the shiny, shiny bows!" Mute with horror, Wren shook her head. "Then they drop knives and axes, quick, or in they go!" They both knew that they didn't have a choice, so they tossed their remaining weapons at his feet and he stowed them swiftly under his cape.
"What do you want us to do?" said Torak, his heart hammering as fast as Wolf's.
"Get out!" roared the man. "The Walker told them! Narik told them! And the anger of Narik is terrible!"
Both Wren and Torak looked around for Narik, whoever he was, but saw only wet trees and fog.
"We are getting out," said Wren, eyeing her bow in the enormous fist.
"Not up the valley! Out!"
he gestured to the side of the gully. "But he can't go up there," said Wren. "It's too steep."
"No more tricks!"
bellowed the walker, and hurled her quiver into the stream. She screamed and leapt after it, but Torak grabbed her arm. "It's too late," he told her. "It's gone." The stream was deeper and faster than it looked. Her beloved quiver had disappeared. Wren turned on the walker.
"We were doing what you said. You didn't have to do that."
"Oh, yes, he did," said the walker with a toothless black grin. "Now they know he means it."
"Come on, Wren," said Torak. "Let's do as he says." Furiously, Wren picked up her pack. If their journey had been hard before, this was worse. The walker strode behind them, forcing them almost at a run up a rocky elk trail that at times had them climbing on their hands and knees. Wren went in front, stony-faced, grieving for her quiver. Wolf soon began to lag behind. Torak turned to help him, but the walker sliced the air a finger's breadth from his face.
"On!" he shouted. "I just want to carry on!"
Wren cut in. "You're Otter Clan, aren't you? I recognize your tattoos." The walker glared at her. Torak seized his chance and hoisted the flagging cub in his arms.
"Was Otter Clan," muttered the walker, clawing his neck where the crusted skin was tattooed with wavy blue-green lines.
"Why did you leave them?" asked Wren, who seemed to be making a supreme effort to forget about her quiver and befriend him in order to keep them alive.
"Didn't leave," said the walker. "Otters leave him."
Twisting a wing off the pigeon, he sucked it between his toothless gums, taking in with it a generous loop of slime. Torak swayed. Wren turned pale green.
"The walker was making spearheads," he said through a rancid mouthful, "and the flint flies at him and bites him in the head."
He gave a bark of laughter, spraying them both.
"Bits of him going bad, getting sewn up, going bad again. In the end, his eye pops right out, and a raven eats it. Ravens like eyes."
Then his face crumpled, and he pounded his head with his fists.
"But the hurts. All the voices howling, the souls fighting in his head. That's why the otters chase him away."
Wren swallowed. "One of my clan lost an eye. The same way," she said. "My clan is friendly with the otters. We mean you no harm."
"Maybe," said the walker,
removing a bone from his mouth and stowing it carefully inside his cape.
"But they still bring it with them."
All of a sudden he halted and scanned the slopes.
"But the walker was forgetting. Narik asks him for hazelnuts. Now where did the hazel trees go?"
Torak hefted Wolf higher in his arms. "The harm you think we bring," he said. "Do you mean..."
"They know what he means," said the walker. "The bear demon. The demon bear. And the walker told him not to summon it."
Torak stopped. "Told who?" Do you mean the crippled wanderer? The one who made the bear?
A jab of the knife reminded him to keep moving.
The crippled one, yes, of course. The wise one, always after the demons to do his bidding.
Another bark of laughter.
But the wolf boy doesn't know about demons, does he? Doesn't even know what they are. Ah, yes, the walker can always tell.
Wren looked surprised. Torak avoided her eyes.
The walker knows about them.
The man went on, still scanning the slopes for hazel trees.
Oh, yes, before the flint bit him. He was a wise man himself. He knew that if you die and lose your name, soul, then you're a ghost, and you forget who you are. The walker always feels sorry for ghosts. But if you lose your clan, soul, then what's left is a demon.
Leaning forwards, he engulfed Torak in a blast of rank breath.
Think about that, wolf boy. No clan soul and you're a demon. The raw power of the Nanwak, but with no clan feeling to tame it. Just the rage that something's been taken from you. That's why they hate the living.
Torak knew the walker was telling the truth. He'd seen that hatred himself. It had killed his father.
What about the crippled one?
He asked hoarsely.
The one who caught the demon and trapped it in the bear?
What was his name?
Ah,
said the walker, gesturing at Torak to move on.
So wise, so clever. To start with, he only wants the little demons, the slitherers or the scurriers. But they're never strong enough for him. He always wants more. So then he calls up the biters and the hunters. Still not enough,
he grinned, giving Torak another blast of carrion breath.
In the end, he whispered, he summons an elemental.
Wren gasped. Torak was mystified. What's that? The walker laughed.
She knows. The raven girl knows.
Wren met Torak's eyes. Her own were very dark. The stronger the souls, the stronger the demon. She licked her lips. An elemental comes into being when something hugely powerful dies, something like a waterfall or an ice river. And its souls are scattered. An elemental is the strongest demon of all. Wolf wriggled out of Torak's arms and disappeared into the ferns. An elemental, Torak thought dazedly. But this talk of demons was upsetting the walker all over again.
Ah, they hate the living,
he moaned, rocking from side to side.
Too bright, all the shiny, shiny souls. Hurts, hurts. It's their fault. The wolf boy and the raven girl, they bring it with them to the walker's beautiful valley.
But we're nearly out of your valley, said Wren.
Yes, look, said Torak, we're nearly at the top.
The walker would not be calmed.
Why do they do it? He shouted. Why? The walker never did them any harm.
Brandishing their bows above his head, he gripped them at both ends as if to break them in two. That was too much for Wren.
Don't you dare, she shouted. Don't you dare hurt my bow.
Back, roared the walker, or he snaps them like twigs.
Put them down,
yelled Wren, leaping at him and trying in vain to reach her bow. Torak had to act fast. Quickly, he opened his food pouch, then held out his palm.
Hazelnuts, he cried. Hazelnuts for Narik.
The effect was immediate.
Hazelnuts, murmured the walker.
Dropping their bows on the stones, he snatched the nuts from Torak's hand and squatted on his haunches. Then he pulled a rock from his cape and began cracking them.
Oh, nice and sweet. Narik will be pleased.
Quietly, Wren retrieved the bows and brushed off the wet. She offered Torak his, but he didn't take it. He was staring at the rock which the walker was using to crack the nuts.
Who is Narik?
he said, keen to keep the walker talking so that he could get a closer look. "Is he your friend?"
"The walker can see him plain enough," he muttered. "I can't a wolf boy. Something wrong with his eyes."
Plunging his hand into his cape, he drew out a mangy brown mouse. It was clutching half a hazelnut in its paws and looked up peevishly at being interrupted. Torak blinked. The mouse sneezed and went back to its meal. Tenderly, the walker stroked the small humped back with his grimy finger.
"Oh, the walker's fosterling."
The rock lay discarded on the ground. It was about the size of Torek's hand, a sharp, curved claw made of gleaming black stone. Where there's a stone claw, might there also be a stone tooth? Torak glanced at Wren. She'd seen it too, and from her expression she'd had the same thought. Oldest of all, the stone bite, the second part of the Nanuak. "That stone," Torak said carefully, "would the walker tell me where he got it?" The walker raised his head, dazed from stroking his mouse. Then his face convulsed.
"Stone mouse," he said. "Long time. Bad time. He's hiding. Otters have thrown him out, but he's not yet found his beautiful valley."
Again, Torak and Wren exchanged glances. Did they dare risk another outburst? "The stone creature," said Torak, "does it have stone teeth inside the stone mouth?"
"Of course," snarled the walker. "Well, how could it eat?"
"Where can we find it?" asked Wren.
"The walker said, in the stone mouth."
"And where is the creature with the stone mouth?" Suddenly the walker's face went slack and he looked very tired.
"Bad place," he whispered. "Very bad. The killing earth that gulps and swallows. The watchers everywhere. They see you, but you don't see them. Not till it's too late."
"Tell us how to find it," said Torak.
The first three books in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series by Michelle Paver are available to download at audible.co.uk for the special multi-buy price of $14.99 until the end of August. If you enjoyed Wolf Brother, you'll want to join The Clan, the official worldwide fan site for all readers of the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series. The Clan is where thousands of fans just like you meet for games and chat, role-playing, art competitions, writing contests and quizzes. Best of all, it's free. So go to www.torak.info, that's T-O-R-A-K dot I-N-F-O, and join The Clan now.